Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we're talking with Jen Ciccone. She is the CEO of Penumbra Group, and we're going to be talking with her live right now. Jen, how are you?
I'm great.
Wonderful.
Thanks for having me.
No, I'm excited to have you on the show. I got to hear you up at the HR Strategic Conference up in, that was up at the Mount Washington Hotel in New Hampshire, was it not?
It was.
That was a great time right during the hurricane during that point. Yes, we had the hurricane. It was wonderful. I was actually amazed that hotel did not lose power. So credit to them.
Beautiful hotel.
Oh,
great location.
It was great. And one of our sponsors, obviously, Bud Bernstein and his group, and they're a sponsor of the HR Power Hour, did a fantastic job, didn't they?
Very good job. They're a top-notch organization. Every event I've been to that they're involved in has always been really stellar.
Yeah, no, they are super. Bud and Heather and the team over there, we're proud to have them on board. So, you know, one of the things that I'd like to talk to you about today, because obviously you do a lot with your organization, and we can certainly talk about that in a second, but one of the things that is employee engagement. And this is something that businesses, certainly HR professionals out there, talk about a lot. They're concerned about it. It impacts productivity, it impacts morale, it impacts a lot of different areas.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me your perspective on employee engagement.
Well, it's quite a buzzword these days, and from what I'm hearing and seeing, typically the C-suite and the boards don't typically get involved in a lot of HR-related issues. They just want to make sure people are, you know, getting hired and are working and all that kind of stuff. But this particular topic is an area that I think the executive level is paying attention to. And essentially what they're looking for is how engaged is our group of employees, meaning how often do we see people going sort of above and beyond and doing more than just the minimum that's expected. And typically people who are engaged do that because they feel a profound connection to the company and to the work that they do. And so they do those things because they want to, not because they have to. And so it's sort of become, you know, I think it used to be we would do these employee satisfaction surveys, and we'd always want to make sure we had all these happy employees because we thought, well, happy employees are more productive. But I think what we've also seen is that you can have a very happy employee who isn't really all that productive. So engagement sort of superseded the satisfaction rating for the extra mile, the going above and beyond, and that's been a real focus area for a lot of organizations in the last few years.
Do you think that, you know, some of the external factors of employees who maybe have challenges at home or have, you know, challenges in their lives, and they're coming in, and certainly with the economy being the way it is today, do you think that that plays a large or small role, or is it just a simple piece of that employee engagement?
Well, I definitely see employees might go through the engagement cycle. You know, you'll have periods in your life where you're very engaged in your work. And then you'll have periods where you may not be as engaged because of some of the things you talked about, what's going on outside of work and challenges or distractions that are influencing that. But, you know, I think, unfortunately, some of the biggest reasons why people disengage are the things that we as leaders do to them. not outside factors.
When you say due to them, you know, one of the things that I've always said, and I think it's true, and I'm sure you'll tell me if you disagree, is the fact that people work for people. They don't necessarily work for a company. And yes, a company is simply, honestly, a group of people. It's kind of like a family. And so the fact is that how you get treated and how your relationship with not only your boss, but the boss's boss and the group of people in the office has such a huge impact on your engagement to that organization. And so, I mean, it's one of the pieces of the puzzle. I'd like to know your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I agree. And that supports the research that Gallup did originally in their book, First Break All the Rules. And essentially the takeaway from that research was the most pivotal relationship with any employee and whether they're going to stay engaged or not is how good it is with their direct supervisor. So I think as supervisors, and it, you know, it puts a challenge on leaders. I understand why the engagement is so challenging because it's unique to each person. What engages one employee of mine is very different than what engages another. So it requires me as the leader to be really connected to who they are and paying attention. And I think it's also very easy for us to spend a lot of time and energy on the employees that are not performing up to standard. Working with leaders across the U.S. in a variety of industries, it's a common theme that I hear. I'll ask, who do you spend more time with, the low performers or the high performers? And, you know, everybody, hands go up. I spend 80-90% of my discretionary leadership time on the low performers. And that's natural because low performers do tend to be a little more high maintenance. But we end up, unfortunately, neglecting our high performers in a lot of cases and making sure that they're not feeling overworked, that we're not over-delegating to them. Sometimes we give them the work to finish that the low performers didn't do. So that poor group ends up working the longest hours with the most stress. We give them everything. We spend no time with them because we figure they don't need to. We can reward them by leaving them alone. And at some point, they start to wonder, why am I putting in all this extra effort as an engaged employee when other people are getting away with a lot less?
When you're measuring that at an organization, I suppose one of the challenges is how do you get a really good measurement, right? I mean, there are plenty of surveys. There are plenty of engagement tools that are out there. What are some of the things that you see are some of the best ways to determine good engagement with an employer?
Well, like you said, I mean, there are surveys out there, and a lot of companies are using survey data. But I think there's also just the anecdotal evidence. If I can tell a quick story.
Absolutely.
Do we have time for that? Okay. So one of my clients is it's a nursing home, but it's a pretty high-level nursing home. It's a memory care specialty organization. So they work just with people in later stages of dementia and Alzheimer's and other brain injuries. And there was a situation with a resident who was in the final stages of life, and they had called hospice in to assist her. And she'd had five children who all lived in the area, and so the social worker had called the family to let them know that, you know, hospice was coming in and they should probably come visit her. And no one came. And days went by, and no one came. And they kept calling and saying, you know, she's still here. If you'd like to see her, you know, now would be the time. And the family was just like, well, we're not going to come in, so just let us know when she passes. And the caregivers who had worked with her and lived with her, you know, at the community over the years, were so concerned about the idea of leaving her alone that they worked out a whole system among them. They, you know, many of them have second jobs. These are hourly workers. They had second jobs, families at home, other obligations. But they worked out a system where when their shift ended, somebody would come back as a volunteer and stay with her and be with her because they did not want her to be alone, knowing the family was not coming. And so they did that for 2 or 3 days. And what it took on their personal lives to make that happen, I was so amazed when I heard the story, but I thought to myself, that's engagement. That's what it looks like right there.
I don't know how you could build a bigger case for it, to be honest with you. That's mm-hmm. really right to the core of what engagement mm-hmm. is in terms of their duty to job and self, right,
mm-hmm.
from themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you are talking about that emotional connection. The engagement is an emotional connection to do what you do and to love what you do and feel like you can make a difference, right? I mean, that's what
yeah.
we're really talking about, that difference. What are some of the things that you think motivate a workforce?
I think there are a lot of things that individuals are motivated by. You have all sort of the traditional things like recognition and incentives and money. And other people are motivated, though, by doing a good job, by making a difference, by challenging work. And so figuring that out, and as you said, I think part of the challenge with engagement is, as a leader, I have to be tuned into what is that unique thing that motivates that person, and how can I provide that in the environment so that it brings out the natural motivation in them. Because, you know, we can pay somebody more, and there's some really good research on this that came out this year, actually. It's a book called Drive by Daniel Pink, and it's a book I recommend whenever I'm speaking on this topic because I think his work is so good on it. But he really talks about engagement and motivation and what motivates people. And I think one of the emerging things that we're seeing, and maybe it lines up with the story I told, and that is, does the employee feel that their personal purpose is aligned very closely to the organization's purpose? And the closer that gets aligned, the higher the natural engagement will be, the higher the natural motivation will be.
It really takes that this process has to start at the top, correct? I mean, really, you just talked about the fact that the C-suite may not get in the day-to-day operations of some of the bigger organizations, though certainly at a smaller organization they probably do. Mm-hmm. But it does start at the top because they have to set the culture, the feel, the right attitude. And so what are some of the things that you're seeing out there that the C-suite is doing to try to improve the engagement?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, to get engagement from your workforce, you have to be engaged as a leader. So they have to see you engaged. And I think you also have to, it goes back to what you said earlier about making the emotional connection. Because engagement requires an emotional connection between you and your employees or you and your workforce, you have to make an emotional investment in them. And they have to see that emotional investment being made. So in some cases, that is spending one-on-one time, you know, making sure that those highly engaged, high performers are having access to the executives, that they're getting noticed by those executives. So the ones that do, I think, the best job, reach out to people in the company that they know are key talent, that are fully engaged, and just check in with them. Because I was talking to one employee who's like second tier down from the president level, and he said, it's really hard for me to just pick up the phone and call the president, right? That's not easy for me to just do. But if he calls me, I can talk to him all day long, because then it's totally okay. So I think it's great when the senior leaders can be proactive in reaching out, and it really opens up their connection to the workforce. In a large organization, you know, I'm working with one president who's overseeing 10,000 employees around the country. Very hard to reach out, right, and make in one-on-one connections with everybody. But he's trying to do it through some of the more other modern social media type of initiatives, like he has a blog. And so he's been blogging to the company on the internet about some of the things he's working on, some of the things he's excited about. When he goes out to the field and he sees something happening, he's acknowledging people through that. So even though they don't really have a close personal connection with him, when they read his blog, they feel closer to him.
No, it's a great tool and a great technique, and at the end of the day, it is about communication, and that they feel and hear from their leaders. You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
I love Maine, and I'm interested in Maine news.
But I want it quickly and simply.
All in one place would be good.
You've just described a great website.
Really?
MaineNewsSimply.com.
Maine news.
Three words. MaineNewsSimply.com. Go to the site and I'll explain. MaineNewsSimply.com collects news as it happens from news sources all over Maine. It's compiled and presented online in an easy-to-read format that keeps you up to date in just minutes. MaineNewsSimply.com is for people on the go who want the news of Maine fast, anywhere, anytime.
I'm on, and you're right. This is exactly what I asked for.
Discover what thousands of Mainers already have. Maine News Simply, the free online website and daily newsletter loaded with headlines and stories from close to 50 news sources.
Maine News Simply looks great, easy to read, current, interesting. I like it.
Try it today, and while you're there, sign up for the newsletter. It's all free. Three words, MaineNewsSimply.com. The smarter, faster way to stay on top of the news in Maine.
GEICO says, let's make life simpler.
Look, I'm all for modern conveniences. But ask yourself, do you really need a blender with 23 buttons just to chop an onion? At GEICO, we think life should be simpler. So we make it super simple to save on car insurance. Just one click and you could be on your way to saving hundreds. Come on, people. Life doesn't have to be that complicated.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates, and today we are talking with Jen Ciccarni. She is the CEO of Penumbra Group, Incorporated. And Jen, we really appreciate you being on the phone today.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. We talked a little bit about employee engagement and, you know, how it impacts productivity and the culture. One of the things that I know you do a lot of is emotional intelligence, or EQ. I guess the first question, the basic question is, what is it?
Yes, emotional intelligence. I know two words that normally you don't hear together, but essentially what it is someone's ability to recognize themselves. So it's someone with a really high self-awareness who knows their strengths, but they know their weaknesses, they know their emotions, like they know the mood they're in, they know how to communicate feelings with others, and they're real clear about who they are and how they come across to others. It's also someone who can read situations and people accurately. So it is a piece of what we talked about where you can plug into someone else and really read the nonverbals, the body language, the tone, their moods, and how they're reacting to you and what you're saying. And then it's being able to respond in ways that are most appropriate. So adjusting your behavior based on what's happening in front of you instead of kind of a one-size-fits-all approach.
So why does this matter? I mean, in the real world, why does this matter?
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of research done. This is a relatively new area of research. It started in the 1980s and was popularized in 1995 when a book came out by Daniel Goleman that was called Emotional Intelligence, Why It Can Matter More Than IQ. And his work was very good around how does EQ or emotional intelligence impact leadership effectiveness. And what does it mean when you have higher emotional intelligence, really? Since then, a lot more research has been done on this. And what we're seeing is that leaders with higher emotional intelligence have employees that are more productive. If they're a sales team, they tend to make more money. If they are an operations group, they tend to have higher retention levels and be more loyal. So it's an area that has had quite a bit of evidence behind it now. In fact, one of the studies I read said that someone with high emotional intelligence actually earns $27,000 more a year.
That's a good amount of money.
I know.
And why is it that connection to that type of increase? Is it because they're able to connect better with their employees and thus move up higher in the chain? Or tell me a little bit about what that research shows.
Yeah, it is. People tend to get promoted more quickly with higher emotional intelligence, so salaries can go up. If it's a salesperson with higher emotional intelligence, they tend to do a better job connecting with the customer, knowing when to talk, knowing when not to talk, and so they sell more. So they, if they're a commission-based person, they probably make more commission. And I think really what I find is that with that higher self-awareness, you know what you're good at and you know what you're not good at. And so I think people with that piece can put themselves in jobs and careers that bring out the best in them and can minimize the worst of them.
Oh, that's important. So tell me some of the challenges with someone who doesn't have emotional intelligence.
Okay, so somebody with lower levels of emotional intelligence have a hard time perceiving accurately how they're coming across to others. So they may intend to be one way, but the impact they have is very different. And so they're out of touch with how they're being perceived and how appropriate their behavior is. And there's a couple of pieces. You know, you have to have a skill set in order to demonstrate the competency of emotional intelligence. And two of those skills are self-awareness and self-control. And I find when I, especially when I'm working with HR people, the people who end up in the office with employee relations issues are lacking one or both of those because they're pretty clueless about how they're behaving. And with low self-control, it looks like moodiness. It looks like unpredictability. So you have somebody you work with, but you never know who's coming to work that day. And they don't know it either. So it's almost like the combination of the two, low self-awareness and low self-control, is usually just a disaster waiting to happen because it's an employee who walks around saying and doing inappropriate things and then have no clue that they've done it.
No, and that's truly a problem in many organizations, as I'm sure you know. Tell me or give me an example, if you can, of how EQ can be brought into a workplace and how it can make a difference.
Yeah, so we can take the concept of EI and apply it in a variety of talent management initiatives. One is, and what I recommend to everyone, is that they start interviewing for these skills, interviewing for candidates that have EQ. We know that EQ skills can be learned, and so they can be developed. So you could also incorporate this type of training into any kind of a leadership development program you're running. I have clients who do it just as a high-level, like, lunch and learn series, where we come in and we do a 90-minute overview. Other organizations will bring it in almost like a book club, and they'll read the books on EQ and talk about it as a group and what the implications might be for them. A lot of times, if we have highly technical folks, what I find is that a lot of people can grow in their career on their technical ability, and they get promoted on that technical ability, and then at some point, they start to sort of derail. They plateau because they lack in some of these other skills. And in that case, an executive coach is a great solution to focus in on those EQ skills.
You talk about hiring and interviewing. Is this something that you recommend that employers use as a pre-screen? And if so, do they then go up against a set of factors that the organization has set or used first by giving it to their supervisors and then match the two? Is that how it works in this area?
Yeah, ideally. You know, there is a pre-employment EQ test on the market. So for organizations that like pre-employment testing, you can actually have your candidates take an official assessment. And in that case, it's great to do a benchmark study where you test all of your high performers in a particular role, look at the profile of their emotional intelligence, and then use that as sort of your, you know, best performance profile to measure your candidates against. Other organizations do not like pre-employment testing. So we still recommend and teach them how to interview for the skills even without an assessment. And part of that process would be also a more probably qualitative evaluation of your star performers where a group gets together and says, okay, what do we think this group all shares in common, and use that as your guide.
When you have a new supervisor or a new manager that was promoted from within, for example, and as you know, sometimes people are promoted because they're really good at what they do, but not necessarily have the best people skills. They may be technically proficient, but may be challenged in their ability to connect and drive a department or an organization. Would EQ be an area where they could go in and learn where their deficiencies are?
Absolutely. And I think it's a really great area to help, you know, one, if you can get training to your high potentials that you're looking to groom into management, if you can get them some of these skills sooner before they end up in the job, even better. But even if they're in the role and they're struggling, it's a great way to help bolster up some of the more leadership and engaging leadership behaviors that really make a difference at that point.
Do you see any of these programs online, or do you really think that it is really better with a one-on-one learning session?
Well, there's also been research done on that, too, and what they have found is that, you know, self-study or online study does increase emotional intelligence, but it won't do a breakthrough change. So the interaction, and because it's so deeply embedded in your own emotions and your own emotional reactions to things, it requires some interaction with someone else. And someone who's observing you, who can say, you know, I saw you get very agitated in that meeting. What was it that someone said or did? And do you know how it came across to the rest of the room? So having that objective kind of observation perspective goes a long way in really, you know, ramping up the learning curve on developing EQ.
Well, I think that certainly when you're talking about any training, being able to look at somebody in the eye, being able to read their body language as they're really understanding it, just not having them say they do, and having that interaction with that training is a key piece to making sure they truly understand it. And unfortunately, from an online learning perspective, it's hard to get that. It's hard to read exactly whether the individual truly understands it and can recite it back and can make sure that they clearly understand what the information is. So I agree 100% that connection that somebody can make one-on-one, either through an executive coaching role or just from a training role where the trainer can then provide that information, certainly is more beneficial to a client company in terms of what they're looking for.
Yeah, I agree.
You are listening to the HR Power Hour, and we will be right back.
Every second, someone turns to OnStar for help.
OnStar Center.
I just woke up and my car was stolen.
I hate that you had to call us under these circumstances, but I'll be happy to assist you. Are you in a safe location?
Yeah, the car was in the driveway. My wife's car was behind mine. I come out to get the newspaper. Her car's out in the street. So they pushed her car out to get to my car.
Do you have the stolen vehicle report number?
550.
Now you can add this kind of protection to your car with new OnStar FMV.
Police Department.
I have a location on a stolen vehicle. It's just off of Bridler Brook Court. It's stationary.
Thanks, OnStar. We have 3 units going out there.
This is Pete.
This is the OnStar Center. We have located the vehicle. Police, you'll be contacting you shortly.
Okay, thanks so much.
OnStar is built into most new Chevy, Buick, GMC, and Cadillac models. And now, you can even add it to your car with new OnStar FMV. Visit OnStar.com for FMV retailers, availability, system limitations, and details.
I'm in a state of caffeination, got all my fingers shaking, must have been my large Americano, mochaccino, macchiato. Now the family's gone to bed, and that's my favorite time to get some tips on better rates. Because my State Farm guy answers late, and even when it's not my agent, someone's standing by so patient. Getting coverage questions answered helps me to relax. Get to a better state, State Farm.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Packers.
Vikings.
We come from different places.
Uptown.
Downtown.
We come to different conclusions.
Half empty.
Half full.
But when we live united, we make a real difference in the building blocks of life. Children succeed in school, families gain financial stability, the health of our neighbors improves, and suddenly so do our communities. Real change won't happen without you.
Live united.
So give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Sign up today at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
And And we are back, and you are listening to the HR Power Hour. And again, we are talking with Jen Ciccone. She is the CEO of Penumbra Group. And Jen, thank you again for being on the show here for the third and final segment. But we are absolutely excited to talk to you about some stuff that's coming up. I mean, I know you do some great workshops, and you even have a book coming out, which I'm sure you'll love to talk about. So let's start there. Tell me about your upcoming book.
Okay, so the upcoming book is going to take a piece of the emotional intelligence component and take a little deeper dive on it. The title will be Ego versus EQ, and it will be designed for senior leaders, you know, the C-suite or business owners. And what we know is that the highest emotional intelligence in a company is the middle manager level. And, of course, I always say, and HR. But typically the middle managers have the highest EQ. But we know that as people ascend in their career and get higher up, and or if they're a business owner and they've always run the business, they have the lowest emotional intelligence in the company. And so I've been really enamored with, like, how does that happen and why is that? Because Daniel Goleman's work says that it's really pivotal for especially executive leadership success to have this EQ skill. And so in doing some research and putting the book together, what we have found is that there has been a lot of research that shows that the higher up you go, the less direct, honest feedback you get.
And why do you think that is?
I think it's just natural tendency to, one, not want to criticize your boss or feel like you're criticizing your boss. And I think people tend to withhold important information at the highest levels. And even when I think a CEO is actively trying to get feedback from the people around them, they have a very hard time getting it. And it's just, I think it's just human nature.
Well, no, I think you're probably right. And certainly, so what did the research show? Continue with your story. I'm curious what that research showed.
Yeah, so the research showed in one study that Daniel Goleman talks about was involving more than 175 studies looking at more than 28,000 managers. And they found feedback on performance became less consistent the higher the person climbed. So they get a lot of mixed messages, I think. And I was speaking with one of my senior executive clients, and he said, you know, it is easy at some point to start believing what you hear because you get this mountain of positive feedback and this little trickle of negative feedback. And it's easy to kind of say to yourself, well, look at the ratio. I must be doing a great job.
Do you think that the feedback to senior executives would be to listen more to the negativity, and maybe not in a way of saying negativity, but really to look at what you're doing not so well to try to improve that area? And is this where the book's going to take you?
Yeah, so what we're going to look at are 8 ego traps. Ego, you know, the concept of ego for this book is egotism, is doing things that kind of keep you comfortable. And that is directly in contrast with showing emotional intelligence, because emotional intelligence is you reading the environment and being the one to get uncomfortable to meet the needs of others around you, instead of kind of expecting the whole world to do the adjusting to you. And organizations set you up. You know, I mean, by the time you're at that level, it's made to work around you as the senior level or the owner. And so you have to work really hard, I think, to make sure that you are staying grounded. And so we're going to run through some ego traps that are common among business owners and senior executives that get them in trouble. Just for, you know, a couple of examples, we have one that is thinking that your technical skills trump your leadership skills. And that's the example we talked about earlier with that person who keeps getting promoted on those technical skills, but at some point it stops working.
Well, no, I think that's key, isn't it? That they really get down into the weeds and understand exactly how they affect the organization, and that it isn't as rosy as they may seem.
Right. Or they, you know, they lose touch with what happens really at the front line, and policies get made that make the front line employees work harder, more difficult. And it seems fine when you're in an office making a decision, but you know, the analogy we use is there's a great television show out called Undercover Boss.
Oh, it is a great show, yes.
Isn't that a great show?
Yes.
So that's the whole idea, is that they lose touch with what their frontline really is dealing with every day and how engaged some of these employees are, and then a company policy gets passed that totally demotivates them from doing their best and going the extra mile. And so it's really important that a CEO stay grounded with what's going on there before policies get made.
Well, that sounds like it's going to be a fun book and an exciting read. And when are you looking to have that come out?
It'll be in November of 2013.
No, that's
next
great.
Fall.
Well, I know right now, currently, you're doing a lot of workshops. So give us kind of an overview of some of the workshops that are happening, maybe that are coming up, and you know, take a look at what exactly you can bring to the table for organizations and leaders and move them forward in this area.
Yeah, so we do a leadership series of workshops, and they are related to engagement and motivation. They're related to interviewing for emotional intelligence, coaching, performance coaching internally. But all of them we weave the EQ piece into, because at some point it really touches all aspects of a leader. And so we will customize a program for the industry, for the level of the audience coming, and sometimes start with a really high level kind of a teaser where we do a 90-minute executive summary of what emotional intelligence is and how that plays into leadership. And then sometimes we have more of the frontline managers or mid-level managers in the workshop, so we get into really a lot of the nuts and bolts of how do you engage your workforce using emotional intelligence.
And how long are these workshops?
Typically a half day. So we can do, you know, like I said, we can do an awareness kind of teaser in 90 minutes, but most of the actual workshops are 3 to 4 hours.
So if somebody was looking at these workshops and said, hey, I want to bring these into the organization, I know, because obviously we do trainings as well, not in this particular area, but we do a lot of trainings, that one of the big questions that I always get asked, and it's typically from the CFO or the owner, and you know where I'm going with this, aren't you? So what is going to be my measurable result that I can take away from and say X amount of dollars for training equals results in the organization? So I am dying to hear your answer on this.
Yeah, this is always the $10 million question in the training business, isn't it? We will try and upfront get some baseline data. So we might try and get some data on, for example, if they are doing engagement studies, what does the number look like right now today before we do any training and development? So we can take a look at that number down the road and see how that's going. Another factor could be the number of turnover, the voluntary versus involuntary turnover, especially if we're going to do some interviewing training. I like to have them keep track of how many people aren't making it in the first 90 days, and that number should increase naturally with better interviewing and selection practices. Another ratio that we will recommend is looking at your either employee to revenue ratio. So how many employees do you have versus how much revenue do you have coming in? And that gives you a general idea of how much, on average, each employee is somewhat supporting in your revenue number. And then watch to see if, with the same number of employees, you can get that revenue number up, meaning everyone is more effective, more productive.
Well, those are good measurements, because that is definitely something that a CFO or an owner has in a tangible way, because it is a big issue. And let's be honest that training dollars are important and scarce. And so if we're going to be able to make sure that, you know, somebody is using their dollars wisely, that they can move forward and ensure that we have an impact in the organization.
Mm-hmm.
So You know, one of the other questions I would ask in terms of the overall things you do is, you said you talked a little about executive coaching. So talk to me a little bit about that and why you think it's important in conjunction with everything else that's done.
Well, I think, you know, there's that old expression, it's lonely at the top, and it's real. It is real. At that point, it's very hard for someone to be able to discuss issues that are going on with employees without violating any kind of confidentiality or, you know, the word gets out, hey, so-and-so is talking about you. So it's nice to have, I think, a confidential person that you can brainstorm ideas with or share challenges with on the team. But I think even more where the value is we as an outsider can be really honest with the executive. We can give them feedback that no one else in the company can get away with. And at first it's very difficult, and I do caution when I'm out kind of selling coaching services, I do caution them that this is not going to be for the faint of heart. You know, this is going to be an experience that's going to really require you to look hard at yourself, to put some light on some of the blind spots you might have, to hear feedback about yourself that you probably haven't heard for a while. I had one senior executive I was working with, and we did a 360 for him, which is a multi-rater feedback instrument. And they had been doing them within the company, but he had never participated. So I went ahead and did one for him, and when I sat down with him to review it, he's like, I am so nervous. I cannot believe how nerve-wracking this is.
Yeah,
and I said,
yeah,
well, there's your empathy right there, because this is what all the rest of your employees feel every single year when they have to sit down and have this. So it's also a good experience, I think, for them to hear the feedback and be able to do something with it.
No, I think it's a critical part of senior leadership, especially the top people, the CEO, the president, the senior VPs. They don't have a lot of people to talk to, and you know, they can either talk up to the board in some cases, which is, heck, you're talking to your bosses, or talk down to your employees, and meaning that, you know, you have a conversation. So you really are lonely at the top. It is definitely something that's there.
And the boards, you know, they're looking at metrics, right? They're not typically with the CEO on an ongoing basis. They're not watching how they're handling staff meetings or employee counselings or issues. And so they can only give feedback based on what they can kind of see on paper. And so that's a kind of a one-sided feedback mechanism.
No, you're absolutely correct. You do a lot of speaking. Tell me about a couple of upcoming speaking gigs that might be happening, what the topics are.
You know, I don't have any association conferences booked right now. I have several that I'm hoping I will be able to speak at as the year goes on. But I do a lot of speaking also inside organizations that do annual leadership retreats for themselves. So, you know, we have an energy company that's doing an annual leadership retreat coming up. That'll be in February, and then an accounting group in June. So it's a mix of sort of open involvement or open enrollment sessions, as well as some private on-site with clients.
No, absolutely. And speaking is a lot of fun. I like to do it as well. So it is one of those areas where you get to be up in front and talk to everybody about a great topic. It's a good rush, as I like to say. You get to get engaged with them and have a lot of fun. So, you know, I had to ask this one question as we come to the end here, and we have about a minute left. Penumbra. Where did that name come from? I just have to ask that question. And I had to practice it to say it right on the radio. So where'd that come from?
I know. It's kind of a double whammy between Shirkani and Penumbra. You know, I get all variations of those two, and I'm always thinking, okay, well, just remember one or the other, and you'll find me. Penumbra is actually astronomical term. It's a dictionary word, and it's when there is an eclipse of the sun, and that moment when the shadow from the moon completely covers the light. So it's when you see that line of that shadow, and then you just have kind of the halo effect behind it. That's the penumbra.
Really? I honestly did not know that. Now, there's probably somebody out there listening going, well, yes, of course it is. But the, yeah, I will be honest, that wasn't a word I knew. But that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jen, yeah. I want to thank you very much for being on the show today. I appreciate you taking your time out of your busy schedule. And I really appreciate the time today for the HR Power Hour.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
Thank you. And we'll be right back.